Welcome back, and we are here now with the Upper Marion Environmental Advisory Council, and I'm ready to turn the floor over to them. Please introduce yourself, and then the floor is yours.
Zach Davis.
Jackie Camp.
Louise Willis.
All right. First, I just want to again thank you guys for hosting this meeting. I think it's a really good opportunity to kind of show what we've been doing over the past year and what we're looking forward to over the next year and probably longer. So without further ado, I will get started. So the first thing I want to hit is just our mission. The Upper Marion Township EAC is dedicated to exploring and promoting ways to create a more environmentally protective and sustainable community while providing support and advice to the township's board of supervisors, commissions, and other personnel. A lot of this will probably look familiar because it's more or less the same presentation start that I've been giving for the past 7 years. So our goals are to develop policy recommendations, including those recommended to encouraging sustainable practices, improving township recycling programs, promoting natural resource conservation within the township and the broader community, increasing education and awareness through community activities, social media, and TV specials, working with the community and regional and local environmental organizations to promote environmental education and outreach, and evaluating available grant funding opportunities to facilitate implementation of environmentally beneficial projects in the township. So now I'm just going to kind of highlight some of the recent accomplishments that we've made over the past roughly 1 year. So we've prioritized collaborating with a number of different UM citizen advisory boards, staff, and local groups. Last year, we installed a demonstration rain garden at Ross Road Field, and we've hosted a few events to maintain it, such as weeds and another planting event to make sure the plants look good and are actually, you know, taking in that spot rather than the spot we planted 2 years ago, which kind of got washed away. We're kicking off the Upper Marion Healthy Yards program alongside the Shade Tree Commission, and that will be kicking off formally next weekend, actually, at Earth Day. We will start handing out equipment and materials to people. I believe we'll have plant giveaways. I'll get to it a little bit, signage to post in yards if you comply with the regulations that we are setting forth in this program. We're also beginning the process to certify Upper Marion as an official bird town. This kind of actually fit in perfectly with our Healthy Yards program, so we kind of saw it as a natural extension to do this in conjunction with it. And we're partnering with Jerry Vitimo on that as well. And then help encourage community members to participate in the park partner events, whether it's stream cleanups, park cleanups, or tree tending events. And then the big thing we did last year, I guess we did 2 years ago and then it went into effect last year, was a plastic pollution ordinance, reduction ordinance, and it went into effect January 1st for a lot of it, and then, you know, partially for utensils went into effect in July 1st last year. And I will also add that our ordinance is now the model ordinance for communities across Southeast PA. I know of a few ordinances that should be passing in the near future that are directly modeling our ordinance for theirs. So it is being recognized across the region. So Upper Marion Healthy Yards program, this is effectively a program for homeowners to individually on their own property commit to a more environmentally friendly, sustainable yard. So less chemicals, you know, we're going to encourage electric landscaping equipment, we're going to encourage rain barrels, stormwater retention, rainwater retention, and all of this will help promote a better environment. We'll have, you know, more pollinators, it'll have place for insects and birds to live. And then as part of it, you know, there's also an educational aspect, so residents can learn more about the benefits to having a healthy yard for themselves, for their families, for their pets, for their community as a whole. So ideally, you know, this QR code here, people can follow that, take a survey to see if they have a healthy yard. If they do, or if they want to commit to having a healthy yard and change their practices, they can get a sign and advertise, and it's a pretty big sign. I think it's like 17, it was like pretty big, I think.
There's some out in the lobby.
Oh, there's some out in the lobby, yeah, so no, you can take a look after.
They're very attractive.
10 by 10, yeah. So it'll have this design, it'll have a promo code on there for more information for other people to join. So I think this is going to be a pretty successful program and hopefully encourage more people to take those steps and encourage native plants and other practices aligned with healthy yards. Similar to that, we also just recently applied for a BCA grant to do some healthy yard adjacent stormwater management practices. So if you're familiar, obviously you guys are, with outside the township building, there are a lot of plots of grass in the back. We would like to remove those turf grasses and fill them with native plants and make it a more sustainable model for what residents can do. And then we would, you know, label some of the plants so they know what to actually purchase and they want to do in their own properties. So those spots marked in blue would be the areas that we're looking at first, and then we could expand as, you know, is successful or not. Continued maintenance of the rain gardens is part of the grant, rain barrel distribution. We did that a lot in the past like 10 years. We haven't done it in about 3 or 4 years, but again, it fits in perfectly with this program. So we thought it would be a good opportunity to get some more rain barrels and distribute them again. And then also one new thing that we're doing is we would like to pursue a webinar series for seasonal environmental topics. So maybe in the winter we talk about, you know, road salt and salt on your property. In the summer we talk about fertilizing your yard, you know, in a sustainable manner rather than using chemicals. In the spring, you know, we can talk about native planting and other things. So really we can use this as a way to reach a broader audience and maybe partnering with other organizations or other citizen boards in the township to do so as well. So here are just some of the images from some of our plantings or events or, you know, things that we've done in the community, just to highlight the things we've done to reach multiple people. Again, we try to do as much as we can in the public and work with a lot of different groups, so I just wanted to highlight that. Now for the second part of our presentation, I kind of want to highlight things in a forward-looking way. I think the landscape now for environmental initiatives is very different than it was last year or 4 years ago. So I think it's important for us to look at things in a different way and commit to things in a different way. So the first thing I have here is just a recognizing the Environmental Act in the PA State Constitution. It says the people have a right to clean air, pure water, and to the preservation of natural, scenic, historic, and aesthetic values of the environment. And I think that's an important thing to remember as we're moving through our environmental sustainability journey. So, as I said, this is a very evolving landscape. Township has to adapt to a federal landscape that's increasingly hostile and actively antagonistic to sustainability initiatives involving all climate change. Grant programs may and will disappear, funding opportunities will dry up, and EPA standards and recommendations will be rolled back or repealed completely. Rollbacks on emission standards, water quality standards, disaster relief programs, and more are already in motion. And we must act now, and we must lead at a local level. Another thing is, climate groups are being actively prosecuted by the FBI now. So that is another thing that we have to consider. It's terrible what's going on in terms of environmental sustainability in this country right now. So I think we need to change the way we're thinking and acting and not back down. So future plans, this, we have a lot. I think we have a lot of recommendations. And I think the main thing that we want to emphasize is it may be time for the township to look into hiring a sustainability manager. Other neighboring communities have done it with much success. There will be a team of two or three sustainability managers in Lower Merion, and they keep expanding. It's something, as we're moving forward, I think we strongly need to consider as this becomes more important, especially at a local level. Again, I think we have been doing this pretty robustly, I would say. It's contributing to the Township Comprehensive Plan and ensures sustainability and community resilience are considered for all projects. This is a thing to, I think, really emphasize. We don't want to have a sustainability project. We want to make sure everything we are doing is sustainable and environmentally forward. Everything we do ties back to sustainability. And no matter how you think about it, we can always tie back. We can prioritize local vendors. We can prioritize sustainable development of infrastructure. There's always a tie back to sustainability and community resilience. I think we also need to look at modifying existing codes to promote more sustainable development. For example, removing parking minimums, encouraging rezoning efforts, implementing EV-ready infrastructure into new building and more. That's just a small list, but I think there is much more that various communities across the country are doing and we should pursue as well. Contribute to the Hoyser 2 development plans to ensure sustainability initiatives are prioritized. Again, this kind of fits in with the comprehensive plan, but is independent of that. So I think it's just another thing to emphasize. Encourage transition to an electrified fleet, including hybrids, plug-in or EVs, and EVs for all township operations. Developing a roadmap to an all-electric building infrastructure throughout the township. Recommending increased involvement to bring the Schuylkill River passenger rail to UM. I'm not aware of the involvement that we have, but I do think it would be a travesty for this project to go through, run through Upper Marion, and us not have its train station. So I think that is a huge element to having a robust public transportation system, and I think that would be a huge asset to our community from an environmental standpoint. Also, we want to prioritize working with the Board of Supervisors, Citizen Boards, and staff to advance the commitment to 100% renewable energy. Again, I think this is more important now than it ever has been in the past, and I think we really need to recommit to hitting these goals. COVID kind of threw a wrench into our plans. We passed this in August of 2019, and then COVID came, and we kind of got derailed from things. But I think it's now a good time to kind of re-situate and, you know, refocus moving forward. We want to continue community outreach and education, especially regarding renewable energy, single-use plastics, native plants, stormwater management, forever chemicals, microplastics, and more. And I think having that webinar series would be really beneficial to reach residents on a lot of these things. We want to consider moving towards all-electric landscape equipment. There is a growing number of communities that have been working together to try to implement this in Southeast PA. And there have been a number of communities across the country that have done so and implemented these practices. And I believe Philly is close to doing so. I don't know when they would do it, but I have heard rumors that they could be pretty close. Continue partnering with communities across Montgomery County and Southeast PA to advance common initiatives. Partner with Upper Marion Parks and Rec to pursue sport equipment recycling and exchange program. And continue looking into the dangers of forever chemicals and microplastics linked to artificial turf, synthetic grass, rubber playing surfaces, chem grass. And I would just add really everything. I think everything is filled with forever chemicals. We are filled with microplastics and forever chemicals. I think it's going to be one of the most pressing issues moving forward in the world, really, and especially America, where our chemical industry is kind of out of control, to be honest. The definition of forever chemical is limited to a very specific subset of X number of chemicals, but it's very easy to implement or to create a new forever chemical that is not classified as such. So it's something that we really need to get ahead of. And stuff like the stormwater or the wastewater treatment facility is a good example of how we can potentially mitigate that in our community with some of the emerging technologies that have come across. So to dive in, I think one of the areas that we really need to kind of recenter on is electrification, and it comes into play two areas. I think the EV electrification is one key area, and then building electrification is another key area. So I'll just speak a little bit to EVs. I think our usage of township EV chargers has been wildly successful. I think I've shown data over the past 3 years that has shown quarter over quarter growth of usage. I didn't get that data this year because at the last quarter that I presented, it was over 100% usage when normalized to a 16-hour day. So I don't think it has gone down. Every time I come to the township building, at least 3 of the 4 chargers are occupied. I can't even charge here anymore, which is good. It's a good thing. So I think Upper Marion would benefit from installing additional chargers throughout the township, Hoyser, the community center, Norview Farms, and more. And again, I think it's kind of incumbent upon us, if we do want to do this, to do it quickly, because if those funds will dry up, then more of the burden is going to be on us financially. I think we need to reevaluate the commercial EVCS ordinance and align with our existing model ordinances. I think we also need to reevaluate the residential EVCS permitting fees to encourage residents to pool permits to ensure safe installation. The prices went up fivefold for some reason. They went from $44.50 to over $200. I have no idea why, but I have already heard of people trying to pull permits, but then figuring out the price and saying, I'm not going to pull it. So this will lead to unsafe practices. It's going to lead to unpermitted work, and there are already a lot of examples of using poor outlets that will burn up because they're not rated for EV continuous usage for 240-volt installations. So this is something that we need to consider so we can ensure safe installation of chargers. I also recommend, the EAC as a whole recommends developing a transition plan for the township fleet to allow to phase out gas-only vehicles. To my knowledge, we only have two full EVs in our fleet, and I think we have one plug-in hybrid. I'm not sure if we have any additional hybrids in our fleet.
I'm just getting, how many, there may be more.
We have three full EVs, two hybrids.
Okay, so yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No, thank you.
That's good, I didn't know that, so that's perfect. So I think there are a lot of case studies existing in other communities around here that have prioritized investing in plug-in hybrids or full EVs, and I think we need to kind of use that as a model to go forward. They're, you know, just off the top of my head, West Norton, East Norton, Lower Marion, and the list goes on about communities of Radnor. I could name a lot. They are investing in full EVs, plug-in hybrids, and the infrastructure that goes along with it. I think also one easy step to start that transition is just to invest in pursuit-rated hybrid vehicles for our police fleet. These are used across the country by a number of communities, and this is something that we, for some reason, aren't pursuing. It's a little bit more money up front, but the gas savings alone, you make back that on day 366. I have a lot of case studies that show that from neighboring communities that would have similar, like AC usage, gas usage. So I think that's something that we should be doing, like, effective immediately. The current market for EVs is drastically different than it was 6 years ago when we signed the Ready for 100 resolution. It's drastically different than it was 2 years ago. It's drastically different than it was a 1 year ago. As of now, there are pursuit-rated hybrids that are proven alternatives that lead to lower emissions and lower costs. There's pursuit-rated EVs now on the market as of last year. And again, neighboring communities do have them, so we could reach out to them for case studies. And there are many different non-pursuit-rated EVs that could fit our needs for detective vehicles and additional township vehicles. And I want to also bring up the building electrification, which I will defer to Jackie on, because she is the expert. Yeah.
Well, we just would like to encourage anytime there is any consideration of replacing buildings or replacing building systems within buildings, that we look at replacing fossil fuel systems with electric systems. The heat pump technologies for buildings of all sizes are, at this point, have been developed to the point where they can handle commercial buildings, residential buildings of any size that we have in this township much more energy efficiently and much more sustainably than the fossil fuel systems that we're currently using in a lot of our buildings. And they're just, at this point with the climate crisis, it just does not make sense to be investing in systems that we're going to expect to last 15, 20, 30 years in a building and not anticipate that within the next 30 years, fossil fuels are going to have to be phased out. So it just doesn't make sense to be making those investments anymore. We need to be looking at electrification of everything. We can do sustainable electricity. There is no way to do sustainable fossil fuel.
And that pretty much wraps up our presentation. I just want to thank our current members. A lot of them couldn't be here just because of the timing with the holidays. Some are out of town for Passover, some are out of town for Easter. So myself, Teresa Landaway, Vicky Midas, Mark Bondra, Louise is here, Kabindra Shakya, Jackie is here, as well as our new student member, Allison O'Donnell. And then special thanks just to Rose Grosso, Carol Kenny, Jerry Batimo, Barley Van Cleef, and Diane Riley. We've worked a lot with these individuals over the past year, and we really couldn't do everything that we are doing without them. So the one thing I just want to leave with is the EAC is willing to work in any way that you guys see fit. We want to be a partnership with all boards, including supervisors and all those citizen boards. So we will do as much or as little as you want us to do. You know, we have a number of experts in our EAC. We have a water scientist. We have a building expert from architecture perspective for clean building. We have one of the America's leading researchers on air quality. We have an analytical biochemist. You know, we have a wide swath of experience on the EAC that reaches a number of different things. And I think it would be beneficial to involve us in as much or as little as you want us, because we're here to serve. So with that said, I again leave it with the Article 1, Section 27 of the PA State Constitution, and any questions, recommendations, or feedback for us.
Carol, would you like to lead off as liaison?
Sure. I'm just always impressed by the breadth of knowledge and the commitment that every single member of this board has. And I'm not a scientist, but I'm somebody who can learn from the members of this committee and have learned a lot. One thing that I wanted to mention in terms of a new administration building, we have outgrown this building, and the building, I hate to say that it's old because it's 50 years old, when you know that there are buildings that are hundreds of years old in Europe that are still being used. But the reality is this: we've outgrown this building, and the technology in this building hasn't kept up with current technology, and that's one big thing. And this board has already made a commitment going forward that when we do either build a new building, which I think we're moving in that direction, but that's not been, you know, totally decided, that we have committed to making it a sustainable building. More sustainable, hopefully, than what we saw with the new high school. And some of us have had tours of the high school, and there are some things in the high school that are sustainable, but I hope that we can do a better job moving forward with that. There are so many different subjects that you mentioned here that you don't discuss every single subject at every meeting, but this committee is the backbone or the impetus for the plastics, law, ordinance, thank you, that we passed, and it was the work of this committee that led to that. A couple of other things. The PFAS, we talk about those in the Sewer and Stormwater Committee. You are also, Jackie, on the Planning Commission. Other people are also going to the Shade Tree Commission. We see how so many things are interconnected, that it's the Environmental Council, but that encompasses so much. And I'm just really, again, so impressed by the commitment of every single person on this committee and the information and the knowledge that you each bring. So I'll just open it up to my compatriots here and see if they have any questions or comments.
Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks for the informative presentation. Has the EAC ever considered a sneaker recycling program? There was one at the Upper Marion Community Center a few years ago that I think was done by the Marlins, and I know they were able to collect a lot of sneakers and raise a fair amount of money as a result of it. I think they stopped doing it because I assume from what I was told that there were some storage issues, which is part of the, but.
Someone had brought this to me, actually. I think it was your question through someone. I think Carol may have forwarded it to me.
I didn't realize Carol brought it, but I definitely mentioned to Carol.
It was funny because like a month before that, I actually did look up sneaker recycling because I had a bunch of, we're talking about sports equipment recycling exchange. I think that's one element, but sneaker recycling, I think, is another issue because most people just throw them away, because once they're kind of destroyed, you can't donate them. They're just going to throw them away too. I did find a program that does do sneaker recycling. I don't know if they do it on a large scale, but it could be something that we as a township could pursue. I can't remember the name of it. It may be something like called Got Sneakers or something. I have a bag in my house.
The first time I've ever heard of sneaker recycling.
I have a bag in my house, so I can get the name for sure. But
also even through the Retriever program, where you used to take care of my clutter, they'll come to your house, pick up your old clothing for recycling, shoes. I just checked to make sure they specifically outline that, and small appliances. So that's another option.
So with Got Sneakers, I think you actually get also compensation for the sneakers?
You do. If there are shoes in good enough condition to resell, that they'll give you like $10 or something per pair. So
what? Didn't know sneaker recycling.
Yeah.
There,
yeah,
there,
the
also
model
are a
successful
number
program
of businesses in the area that do
mm-hmm.
sneaker recycling.
Yeah.
I know that it's not always there, but a lot of the time there's a sneaker recycling box at the entry to Mom's over in Bryn Mawr, Mom's grocery store. And a lot of the running stores that sell sneakers will also do a recycling program that you can bring back your old sneakers when you go to buy new ones and they'll recycle them.
My understanding is even when they aren't in great condition, they can be broken down.
Ground
and take,
up.
You know,
broken
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
Now, the materials that are used in the sole can actually be reused to make new sneakers.
Yeah,
so
I literally never throw away
sneakers.
Same.
Yeah.
They just pile up in my house. Yeah.
I have a long story as to why, and it's not related to the topic, but something that happened to me about 7-8 years ago is why I never throw away sneakers. I'll tell you during the break.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for everything you've done. I mentioned this every year. What are you guys looking at with regard to water conservation? Because I will tell you, most people don't realize this, but through the fall and winter, we were in a drought.
Significant.
Oh,
yeah.
I realize. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but.
As
I know,
as
we
were planting
UV and all that. That's all good
stuff.
No,
I agree.
Although I gotta ask you, the resident architect here besides myself, has the thermodynamic heaters gotten to a point where when the temperature drops below zero, whether it still heats the house, because those compressors kind of flip, right?
The new inverter-driven technologies are being used well up into Canada, successfully in fully electric buildings. Some of them, when you get down into the extreme low temperatures, will flip over to supplemental electric resistance backup heat.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, in this climate, in this region, the systems that I was putting into large apartment buildings were not requiring electric resistance backup heat because the compressors are effective in heating a building down to temperatures of 5 below. And we don't typically get any colder than that in this area. So I was doing buildings up into New England even that we weren't having to add the backup heat to the systems. I think that the technology gets better every year.
Yeah.
So.
And I know Canada for residential properties, a lot of their heat pumps are rated down to 22.5 under zero. So significant improvements over the past, 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. So what about water?
Water, yeah, no, I agree. And hopefully it's something that ties in well with our Healthy Yards program. Obviously, reduction of water is part of that. So that's something that we can take a closer look and prioritize more so when we roll this out.
Rain barrels are easy, but they're
yeah.
also pretty limited in how much they help with water conservation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's great.
About just, even taking showers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but that's one of the things that I think that we can be looking at when we talk about looking at our local building codes to see if that maybe should be an area that we should be considering, at the very least, offering some kind of incentive to builders, especially for the multifamily buildings that have been going in, because that really adds up quickly if all of the faucets and showers and toilets are low flow. It makes a really big difference. And again, the technology there has gotten very good. I mean, you can hear our current president go on and on and on about showers that don't have enough water pressure to rinse the soap off, but he really doesn't know what he's talking about. The technology for low flow faucets at this point uses hydraulics to give you the water pressure with less water. That's what science is all about. It's why it's nice to have science and pay attention to it.
And funded.
I think there's a good opportunity to kind of get to the source of a lot of sustainability and environmental issues by looking at code, and kind of we can control things at that level that won't be burdensome to developers, but will benefit the community as a whole.
Yeah, and low-flow water fixtures are actually a cost-neutral addition to buildings. It doesn't cost any more to use the low-flow fixtures or to install them. You won't get any pushback from developers about it. So that's even a place where you could maybe even put a stretch code in place in the township that we just require something over and above what the normal building codes require.
We may not be able to do that. If there's something that's going to violate the building code, the ICC building code, we can't adopt it locally.
We can't subtract. We can't give allowances that the building code doesn't require, but we can add additional requirements.
This was a mini maxi.
A mini maxi.
Right, yeah. Right. That's the minimum. We can go further, but it's not.
I thought you had to get special exemptions to do additions now too. I believe so, because I actually testified on this in a couple of communities where they wanted to go beyond the current code and they were not permitted to, and it required testimony.
And is that a state requirement? Okay, because I know there are a lot of parts of the country where
the state code here, the UCC, is a mini maxi, and the Supreme Court has ruled that.
We can check on it, but I just wanted to bring that out. That my last understanding was that the code is the code is the code. You can change it, and it's every 3 or 5 years, and that's when you can get these kinds of modifications made to it.
Mm-hmm. But who can change the code?
I think what they're talking about doesn't violate the UCC.
Well, that's where I was headed. I didn't know whether specifically if that type of water demand would be restricted or controlled by the state code. It's just something to check. That's all.
It should be built into the plumbing code, the ICC plumbing code for water.
There might be some restrictions or regulations that would allow.
Yeah. That would allow modifications.
Yeah. At least adopt some. Allow the board to adopt some standards for water savings.
Who could check on that?
I'll have Mark Kenny Myers. Mark.
That's what we have. Fine solicitor for.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay. Let's do that.
Okay, I've seen at the time we're at the end of the allotted time for this session. So I think my questions were answered, and very much appreciation for all the initiatives that you're involved in. Some of them I wasn't aware of. So that was nice to hear that this evening, just to know everything that you're involved with. And I was interested in also the pursuit rated hybrids. That I know that has been an issue with public safety, mm-hmm. without wanting to go that direction just because of you're in pursuit and you have a vehicle that's insufficient. Mm-hmm. So I know that has been a determining factor with not going that direction. So I'm interested in getting more information about that.
I can send you some community.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
One thing about that, when I've spoken to our police chief, is not just the speed, it's also the size of the car. It has to be large enough to contain all the equipment that they carry with them.
They're all big SUVs.
So that was one issue that was mentioned.
It used to be, that used to be an issue, but now that they're officially pursuit rated by.
And they're big enough.
Yeah. So the only good news, I think, on the environmental front for EV, not necessarily the vehicles as much as the solar pushback, is that a lot of the solar manufacturers and a lot of senators from red states are pushing back, because the panel factories have actually brought a lot of good jobs to their constituents. They're not real thrilled with the idea of tariffs. So we'll see.
Yeah. And production has been way up in America, which is good. Yeah.
So I just checked. In Pennsylvania, municipality can modify the building code, but can only make them more restrictive,
less restrictive.
This would be more restrictive.
And it must go through a Department of Labor review.
Pennsylvania
Labor
Department.
And Industry. Labor and Industry.
Okay.
We still.
Department of Labor and Industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is how we get our sprinkler code in.
Okay.
Well, we were grandfathered in with the sprinkler code.
You were also grandfathered out of the sprinkler code too for a period of time.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for your presentation and all your dedication and hard work. Much appreciation. And now at this time, we would like to recess, and then we will reconvene with the Library Board of Directors. Thank you.